From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ask former Vice President and near President Al Gore if he's running for the White House in 08, and he has a very consistent, deliberate answer. He has no plans to run. He does not expect to run. He just wants to talk about big issues, as he did Sunday night at the Oscars.
We need to solve the climate crisis. It's not a political issue. It's a moral issue. We have everything we need to get started. With the possible exception of the will to act, that's a renewable resource. Let's renew it.
But Al Gore knows what people are wondering. He had fun with it, with an almost announcement joke as the orchestra came up at the Academy Awards.
Even though I honestly had not planned on doing this, I guess with a billion people watching, it's as good a time as any. So my fellow Americans, I'm going to take this opportunity right here and now to formally announce my intention.
Al Gore, with a billion people watching this hour On Point, we're talking about whether former Vice President, near President Al Gore should run for president and whether he will. You can join the conversation. Should he do it? Will he? Could Al Gore step in late and take the Democratic nomination? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we have a great lineup of big political thinkers to weigh Al Gore this hour. Old friend and new Republic editor Marty Peretz, Democrat Arianna Huffington, Republican strategist Whit Ayers, and joining me first from Washington, Matt Bai, an old friend and contributing political writer for the New York Times Magazine. His new book, nearly out, is The Argument, Billionaires, Bloggers, and the Battle to Remake Democratic Politics. Matt Bai, thanks a lot for being with us.
Great to talk to you again, Tom. I wish the book were nearly out. It's about 6 months away, but I appreciate the
hey, in global terms, Matt, that's nearly out.
We'll watch it. That way to you, not to me.
Okay, good luck with it. Okay, here's Al Gore, a billion people watching, and an awful lot saying, maybe he should do this. What do you think, Matt?
Well, do I think you should or do I think you will? Because those are two different questions.
And we've got them both on the table. Start with, I don't know. I mean, should is kind of a politically loaded question, and so is the answer, I guess. But start with should.
Well, I mean, you know, I have to preface this, and I'll probably say it to you a few times, Tom, and that I don't really know Al Gore very well. He's not talked with me much over the years. I know a lot of people who talk to him very frequently.
And we'll hear from some of them, Marty Peretz, in just a few minutes.
But to know the mind of the man is, you know, a difficult thing, and I wouldn't want my conjecture to be mistaken for, you know, for knowledge. But I do think, I think there are reasons that he should not run, actually. You know, you could make a case that he should, but I would make a case that there are compelling reasons for him not to do it. One being really that although he's enjoying this great glow off the movie and the issue and some sort of restoration in the public mind, it's
Nobel Prize nomination, presenter at the Grammy Awards. He's up there with Queen Latifah. Everybody's, you know, cheering for Al Gore. Wow, I think they love you, man, says Queen Latifah.
Yeah,
I mean, he's all over.
It doesn't get any better than that, and I'm sure that's very enticing for anyone in that position. But once you get into a race, of course, it's different for a couple reasons. You get treated differently, and also people get a better sense of you again. I mean, a lot of people have sort of forgotten what they didn't like about Al Gore, why he didn't wear as well, and I think that he would, you know, should he get into the race, he would immediately, you know, shoot up and pulse. I think he'd be at the top of the field, and then from there it would be a very, very precarious situation.
Talk about his strengths and weaknesses, Ken.
Yeah, I mean, I there are a couple of weaknesses here, I think, you know, and the strengths, I guess, are more obvious because he has been a strong, vociferous critic of the administration. He's nationally known. He is a great person to make the case and campaigner. He seems to have been somewhat reborn in terms of saying what he really believes about this administration. However, you know, first of all, I think the presidency and presidential campaigns in particular really lend themselves to people who wake up in the morning burning to do that and with an idea of what they want to do. And it's hard in any modern history, it's hard to find any example of someone who's kind of waited around and dithered and ended up winning the presidency and carrying out the office. I think that in a sense, if you don't know that this is something you want to do, if you're not willing to slog through Iowa and New Hampshire, I think that is the one benefit of the process, is that it tends to weed out people who don't have sort of the heart, for whatever reason, to do it at this moment.
Well just hold it there, because you put a lot on the table. I mean, isn't Al Gore kind of one of a kind here? I mean, who else has been through what he went through? Nobody, really. And wouldn't you have to say he had heart in the way he's come back from that huge kick in the teeth in 2000?
Sure.
He has been out there.
He doesn't have heart. I'm suggesting he may not have the stomach or the heart to whatever body part you want to use to actually take this race at this moment. And everybody looks like they're one of a kind in peculiar situations, but I think, you know, the fact remains that to run for president, I think you need to go through the process, and I think going through the process requires a genuine passion and commitment for doing it at the moment that you're doing it, and that's a hard thing to summon if you don't have it, and if he had it, he'd already be in the race.
I guess the word dithering doesn't seem to really apply either, given that he's all over the place. When do you think he'd have to get in, Matt? I mean, what is the process?
Also, you're correct also in that I don't think he's actually thinking hard about route running. So
really?
You know, from what I understand, mm-hmm. I don't think that's a strong option for him. So I don't know that you could call it dithering either. I think he's more or less to this point decided. But let me say one other quick thing before we talk about the timetable, which is before it leaves my mind, I think another reason, from everything I hear, and again, I've not talked to the man, but from everyone I talk to who does, and from the fact that I haven't talked to him, I think he does harbor a genuine bitterness and frustration from everything he has been through in the 2000 campaign toward the media, toward the process, toward the Republicans. I think there's a genuine contempt there for parts of sort of the American political picture, and Martin Peretz or others who know him better may dispute that.
But so does that turn him away from the White House or drive him toward it?
Well, I don't know where it drives him, but I think it ought to drive him away from it, because I don't think that's an effective way to campaign or an effective way to govern. I think that's toxic. I think this is proven by sort of political, you know, especially recent political history, and I think it's fairly intuitive that you can't, that kind of bitterness and anger is toxic. You have to put it aside. You have to be thicker skinned. You do have to answer questions for people. You do have to be, you do have to have some openness.
You think he's so bitter that he doesn't answer questions? I mean, he's out there on stage talking about issues all the time.
He is, but I do think he's talking about the issues he wants to talk about to the people he wants to talk to them about, but I don't think I think he has genuine contempt for the media. That doesn't make him singular, and a lot of people share it, and maybe he even has good reason.
But if it's too visceral, it may be hard.
Mm-hmm. I think you got to put that behind you if you want to be president.
Matt, talk about the timetable for a second. How late could he come in and have a chance here? A lot of money being raised already, people pouring into this race. Could he wait until the fall? Could he wait until just before New Hampshire? How late could Al Gore come in?
You know, the short answer, Tom, I think, is we don't know, because the process changes dramatically. The Internet changes things dramatically. I don't know. I can't speak to the ballot rules exactly, but, you know, there are the process is certainly different than it was before. We don't know how many people who are locked down for other candidates would turn around and support Al Gore. I suspect there's a fair number. But the bigger thing, I think, when you think about timetables, that this would be a different situation. If we turn back the clock, if we looked at, say, 2004, and you looked at the field that was in at that time, where Howard Dean was leading the field in such a pronounced way, and when John Kerry emerged from that field, and John Edwards was second in Iowa, you know, that was a field of sort of flawed candidates, I think, who people had some serious doubts about, and a guy like Al Gore could have gotten in very late. This obviously is a very different field. Again, I think if Obama weren't in it in particular, it might be a different scenario. But when you have Hillary Clinton, who locks up a lot of support in the party, and then you have a challenger who excites people as much as Obama does, and then you have John Edwards, who's been through it before and has a tremendous goodwill on the left and has carved out a niche sort of in the populist part of the party. I think it's hard to see that kind of vacuum where you can sweep in that late and change the entire dynamic of the race. I think when you have these kinds of stars near the top of the field, you would need to make a decision probably sooner.
I hear that, and yet here's a really singular candidate through history and experience. Matt, may I stand by for just a moment? I want to welcome into our conversation Martin Peretz. He's editor-in-chief of The New Republic, a longtime friend of Al Gore, and I mean longtime, as in four decades. He was a professor of undergraduate Al Gore at Harvard in the 1960s. Martin Peretz, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So the two questions we've got, should he run, will he run?
Well, I think that it would be good for the country if he ran, but I don't know whether he will run. I'm sure that he's tempted Part of the temptation is that so many people are telling him that he should. One of the problems, I disagree with Matt, actually, that these unusual candidates, at least two of them, have remarkable flaws.
Unusual as in Obama and...
Let me put it another way. Hillary and Edwards have very deep problems. You can't go anywhere where you find one person who's very attached to Hillary and four or five people who just roll their eyes in horror.
Like now David Geffen, for example.
Well, yes, but... David is, he has, first of all, the feel of the country in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been hitting the musical taste of the country like no one else does, and the musical taste of the country is not a less serious index in a certain way than the political taste of the country.
Marty Peretz, we've got to take a short break here. There's a lot more we want to hear, but in a word, do you think Al Gore has the stomach for it? Might he want it still?
I think he probably does.
Martin Peretz, editor-in-chief of The New Republic, please stand by. And Matt Bye with The New York Times. Listeners, we are talking about Al Gore and whether he should run for president, whether he will run for president. You can join us. Is this a man of the past, of the future, both? And would you like to see Al Gore run again for president? Do you think he will? Could he win? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Funding for On Point comes in part from the Music Emporium. For 39 years, celebrating the enduring artistry of the acoustic guitar. Many collectible, boutique, and vintage instruments at themusicemporium.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Al Gore, whether he should run for president, whether he will run for president. You can join us. How do you stack Gore up now against Hillary, against Obama, against McCain or Giuliani, Romney, you name it? Has Al Gore earned another shot with what happened in 2000, with his committed work on global warming, his early criticism of the Iraq War, and all the rest? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Martin Peretz is with us, an old friend of Al Gore, 40-plus years now, editor-in-chief at the New Republic magazine, knows the man well. Matt Bye's here, big-time political reporter for the New York Times. He's got a new book coming out soon, The Argument. Let's listen back for just a moment to that excruciating moment for Al Gore. Wednesday, December 13th, 2000, on national television, Al Gore conceding the presidential race to George Bush, with an early reference here, you'll hear it, to the on-again, off-again confusion about the outcome of that race.
Just moments ago, I spoke with George W. Bush and congratulated him on becoming the 43rd president of the United States. And I promised him that I wouldn't call him back this time. I offered to meet with him as soon as possible so that we can start to heal the divisions of the campaign and the contest through which we've just passed. Almost a century and a half ago, Senator Stephen Douglas told Abraham Lincoln, who had just defeated him for the presidency, "Partisan feeling must yield to patriotism." I'm with you, Mr. President, and God bless you. Well, in that same spirit, I say to President-elect Bush, that what remains of partisan rancor must now be put aside, and may God bless his stewardship of this country.
Al Gore, December 13th, 2000, in a very, very tough concession presentation to George Bush after a highly disputed election, maybe the most in American history. That was then. This is now. Jimmy Carter, Sunday, February 25th, just a couple days ago, talking about Al Gore on This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
My favorite Democrat for a number of years now has been Al Gore. If Al should decide to run, which I'm afraid he won't, I would support Al Gore.
You think he should?
I think he should. His burning issue now is global warming and preventing it. He can do infinitely more to accomplish that goal as the incumbent of the White House than he can making even movies that get, you know, they get Oscars.
Jimmy Carter on Al Gore. He should do it. He's his favorite. You know, the White House is still a bigger platform than the Oscars with those billion watching. Martin Peretz, I wish you'd take us a little bit further into the should question. You've written about it 6 months ago and more recently. Why do you think Al Gore should run for president?
Well, let me say something about Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
I think he's a liability to Al Gore. I think he's a liability to the party. I think the party will have to figure out some trick, either to not to get him to address the National Convention, as ex-presidents usually do, or to put him on when it's 3 o'clock in the morning in every region of the country.
Maybe so, but he's still a former Democratic president that an awful lot of people know.
An awful lot of people know, and many, many dislike. He's the least attractive president in the last, I'd say since Nixon. Look, Al Gore's intellectual and political life has been modeling projects, actually. He knew the world of deterrence and the world of weapon systems when the United States and the Soviet Union faced each other down. He made tremendous contributions to that area of public policy. And in the end, it was the most important area of public policy. As now, he has been urging us for decades to look at this problem, which even liberals tended to look away from. And he has, in a certain sense, changed the world, changed the atmosphere, the intellectual and mental atmosphere of the world about the danger to life on the planet. And he is not a hysteric. He is not given to hysteria. So I think the people trust him. They trust him in a certain way because he lost the election in such a ugly way. I think he can say, actually, that, hey, I won before. I can win again.
Let me ask you, Marty Peretz, Jimmy Carter may think he'd be more effective in the White House. I'm reading here Simon Rosenberg, head of the New Democratic Network. And he asked this question. He says, is being president better than this? And this meaning Oscars and Grammys and Nobel Prize nominations. He says, I think what Gore's figured out how to do is something that a lot of people want to do. He's living a life of great freedom and pursuing his interests, and he's having an impact on public policy. With all that, Martin Peretz, do you think Al Gore would, you know, give up that freedom, that kind of independent actor status, for the man in the White House status?
An impact on public policy is very different from being able to make the decisive decisions.
And that is a big difference indeed. Marty Peretz, Matt Bai, please stand by for a moment. I want to bring into our conversation from Los Angeles Arianna Huffington, co-founder, editor of the Huffington Post, nationally syndicated columnist, author of 11 books, most recently on becoming fearless in love, work, and life. Arianna Huffington, thank you for joining us. Should Al Gore do it, Willie?
I would love to see Al Gore enter this race. And the main reason is that he would be a very different Al Gore than he was in 2000. There is a freedom that you mentioned, which is not just about his current life, but about the way he is, the issues he raises. You may remember in 2000, global warming was not much raised by his campaign, which was dominated by Bob Schramm and other consultants telling him what he should do in a poll-driven, focused, group-tested way to win the election.
Wasn't much to raise then, even though he's been on it big time since the late 80s, maybe before.
Exactly. So
he's been on it, actually, since he was an undergraduate when he studied with Roger Revelle.
Okay, that's a long time. But anyway, Arianna, a different Al Gore?
Which is very, very clearly documented, you know, in Inconvenient Truth, how long he's been on the subject, but not during the presidential campaign. A different Al Gore, absolutely. And since I believe in political redemption, I've had my own, and since I believe that America is all about second and third and fourth acts, I think it's an incredible narrative. It's also an incredible narrative sort of in the collective unconscious, if you want. We're moving away from the sort of John Wayne archetype of politics that was inhabited by Ronald Reagan and in a much more destructive way by George Bush. Mm. And I think in a way that, as John Cusack said once, it is his theory, so I want to give him full credit, but
okay.
He talked about moving to the Atticus Finch archetype, and that is something that could be embodied by Al Gore in all his moral and intellectual prowess.
Atticus Finch, shades of Gregory Peck in Al Gore, then.
Exactly. Okay, he could lose a few pounds, but that could be done easily.
Hey, let me put this one point to you, Matt Bai, our gimlet eye here. A very different Al Gore. Do you see it, buy it, believe it?
Let me say hello to my friend Ariana there in L.A. It's nice to hear her again. And the short answer, Tom, is I don't know. But I will tell you this. I will introduce a note of skepticism. I mean, I think that's, you know, everyone tells me that there's a lot of truth to that, and certainly he has been much more vocal in his criticism of the Bush administration and his promoting his agenda than he was in office. And of course, certainly a skeptic could ask, and I have, why in 8 years as Vice President of the United States he did so little, frankly, on this issue, and now it's everybody else's fault.
On which issue?
On global warming, which I think is a legitimate question to ask.
Hmm.
But, I mean, how many times did he show the presentation when he was Vice President, I guess, is the question I would ask. But you know, I think that's a fair question that he would get, and I think he'd probably answer it with some with effectiveness. I think the question is, we've always heard about the other Al Gore, right? The real Al Gore. Oh,
yep.
You don't know the real Al Gore.
Right. Not the wooden one, not the stiff one, the real one.
Right. You know, he's so funny in public, you have to be around Al Gore. Now, I'm not suggesting that's not true. I think Martin probably knows a very funny real Al Gore, and Ariana may too.
Well, and the whole world has seen a fair amount more legs since 2000 with his travels.
But the question is, why in the public eye, why as a politician, was there this other perception of who Al Gore was? And maybe that's because he wasn't liberated in the way he is now, but maybe it's because he really doesn't like to make himself available or accessible, that he doesn't trust, he doesn't trust the media, that he doesn't trust the political process, that he doesn't, that he's never really been temperamentally suited to sort of putting himself and his arguments out there in the public arena, letting them stand, and taking the and being willing to lose. And of course, when you're not in office and when you're not running for office, that's a different equation.
Marty Peretz?
When you're running as a candidate in elections, you have to be and you want to be that you want to speak with that abandon, and you want to put yourself forward in that way. You got to be willing to lose. And I don't know if this Al Gore is different from that Al Gore in the sense that he's willing to put it out there and walk away if he were to lose again. If, in fact, he wanted to run, which I'm not convinced he does.
Well, he's certainly willing to lose in 2000. But, Marty Peretz, what about this piece? Matt Bai says Al Gore now especially despises the media, despises Republicans. He has to make peace with his demons, Matt says, to exercise that freedom.
Well, the contrast between Al Gore before he was vice president and the same contrast now with his vice presidential term, those two contrasts are very stark and dramatic. He was much freer when he wasn't vice president, and he was much freer now. What I'd like Matt to give me is an instance of a vice president who actually made a distinctive public record for himself, independent of the president.
Dick Cheney?
Well, that's not a model exactly.
It's distinctive.
Well, let me say on that point, Tom, that and let me go back for 1 second, because you said before you sort of turned away, you said, well, he was certainly willing to lose in 2000. I would argue that he wasn't. I would agree with Ariana that he was highly controlled by consultants and highly cautious and highly unwilling to say what he really believed and wanted to do. And I think
we heard his concession speech in a very tough forge there.
Okay, that's a concession speech. I'm talking about the way you run a campaign, which I think is critically important. In terms of, you know, what Martin's saying, I would look. And I'm not trying to. I'm only trying to be skeptical here. I have no. I think Al Gore could be a compelling candidate and is a great public servant. But I don't think you can have it both ways in that regard. You can't have said throughout the '90s, this is the most powerful, independent, full partner of a vice president the country has ever seen to that point, and then turn around now and say, well, find me a vice president who was supposed to forge his own agenda. You can't have it both ways. If Al Gore was the most powerful, important partner of a vice president the country has ever seen, then he needs to stand on that record. And frankly, his record of reinventing government is pretty impressive, and we could use some more of that now.
I've got to take a quick break. Let me just say this. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let me get one call, and I'll come to you, Ariana. Angela's calling from Somerville, South Carolina. Angela, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom, so much. I'm down here in the trenches, and we are the third primary state.
And we know it.
And all of the candidates have been here, and I've seen several of them, and I've been hearing what people are commenting about it. If Al Gore comes here and he decides to run, all bets are off because he has so much respect in the Democratic community here. I think he could win the primary.
Why not Edwards? He's from your turf. Why not Obama, Hillary?
No doubt about it. We love it. The problem is that Bush has taken a wrecking ball to the federal government, and what people forget is that the president is not a speechmaker. The president is the chief executive, and the only way they can get things done is by working through the federal government. And it's going to take someone who can get on the job the first day and fix things because the federal government is devastated right now with all the contracting. And
why would Al Gore be better than any of the others at fixing it?
Experience, respect. All the federal employees respect him. The world respects him.
Angela, we've got it. Ariana, there's skepticism from Matt Bye. Respect from Angela in South Carolina, primary state.
Well, I think the most important thing is not going to be his record as vice president, but his position on Iraq. If we're going to choose one issue that is going to dominate the 08 election, it's going to be Iraq. And Al Gore has been consistent and consistently right on Iraq from the beginning, from the time when Hillary Clinton and John Edwards were casting votes to authorize the war. He was giving passionate speeches against it. So that's going to be a huge political advantage at a time when the polls show that the public is ahead of politicians, including ahead of most Democrats in Congress right now.
Let's hear from Florida, Delray Beach. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Joe.
I cannot agree with Ms. Huffington more. I have had the opportunity in the last 40 years to work with a number of Democratic presidential campaigns. And I want to tell of an instance last cycle in Florida. I did an event for Kerry Edwards, and Al Gore was the speaker. I can remember standing there and looking at him. He was funny, charming, engaging, interesting, and I said to myself, if he had shown the American people 10 minutes of that guy, he'd be president.
So what do you say to Al Gore today, Joe? What's your message?
Absolutely. I'll see you in New Hampshire.
Okay, Joe, we got Ariana. What about you? Maybe you have, but if you were sitting, I mean, he was out in Hollywood, but if you sat down with Al Gore today, what would you say to him, to make your pitch that he ought to do it?
Well, I would definitely urge him to run. It would definitely, as Matt even considered, be a compelling candidacy, and I think it would be very important to have him back in that very political debate, as well as the debate on global warming.
But how would you persuade him? What do you think it's going to take to get him to personally make that investment, step up and say yes?
You know, frankly, I think that it's going to be more likely for him to enter the race if Obama stumbles. I mean, the space, I mean, I always thought that the 08 election was going to be about Hillary and the anti-Hillary. The anti-Hillary candidacy was going to center on opposition to the war in Iraq, since her position on this issue has been so muddled. And right now, the anti-Hillary position is very ably occupied by Barack Obama, whose numbers in the polls, as you can see, are skyrocketing. He's now ahead of Hillary with African Americans, for example. So I think it's more likely if something happens, and I love what Obama is bringing to the campaign, so God knows I'm not wishing it, but if he stumbles in some way and that space is left available again, it's more likely that that's when Gore would enter.
There's a landscape where I guess anything could happen. Arianna Huffington at the Huffington Post, always great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah.
Matt Bai, Martin Peretz, please stand by. Listeners, we're asking, Al Gore, should he run for president? Will he? You can join us after an Oscar and a Nobel Peace Prize nomination. Do you think Al Gore still wants the White House? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Indigene Pharmaceuticals, maker of Relaxane, a supplement for relieving the symptoms of everyday stress, available at Rite Aid GNC stores and Relaxane.com, and McGuire Associates, 23 years helping educational institutions achieve strategic success with insightful research and creative consulting. McGuire ASS.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Al Gore. Should he run for president? Will he run for president? People said he was wooden stiff. Has he changed? Has the country? Could he step in late and grab the Democratic nomination? What do you say to Gore in 08? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. He certainly talked tough since he's been out a little bit in the wilderness. Here's Georgetown University, October 18th, 2004. Al Gore, very critical of the Bush administration.
It is clear that President Bush has absolute faith in a rigid right-wing ideology and does not feel the same desire that many of us would in gathering facts relevant to the question at hand. He ignores the warning of his experts. He forbids any dissent, never tests his assumptions against the best available evidence. In fact, he is arrogantly out of touch with reality. He refuses to ever admit mistakes, which means that so long as he is our president, we are doomed to repeat his mistakes. It is beyond incompetence. It is recklessness that risk the safety and security of the American people.
Beyond incompetence, recklessness, Al Gore talking about the President George Bush right there. Martin Peretz is with us this hour, editor-in-chief of The New Republic, a longtime friend of Al Gore since the 1960s. Matt Bai, The New York Times, is here. And right now, from the Republican side of the ledger, we're joined from Alexandria, Virginia, by Whit Ayers, Republican strategist, GOP pollster, president at Ayers, McHenry & Associates. He's had clients Bill Frist, Lamar Alexander, Lindsey Graham, and a whole lot more. Whit Ayers, thanks for being with us. What do you think of an Al Gore presidency or a candidacy? What would you think of it as a Republican?
Hello, Tom. It's good to be with you. I guess my role here is to be the skunk at the picnic.
No, don't be a skunk. We're just curious how it looks from that side of the fence.
Interrupt this love fest here a little
defensive.
Bit. Well, of course, Al Gore is like fingernails on a blackboard to most Republicans. They think he's smug and he's arrogant. But from another perspective, if I am Hillary Clinton, I'm a lot more worried about Al Gore than I am about Barack Obama.
Why?
Because he clearly is qualified to be president of the United States, and Barack Obama clearly is not. He has the experience. He's associated with a major issue in global warming. He's been where the Democrats have been all along on Iraq, and he can make the argument that there's a sense of justice in his nomination and election after the 2000 election. So I think he is a very formidable potential candidate and a very, very serious challenger to Hillary Clinton. I still think Hillary wins the nomination, but I'd be real concerned about Al Gore if I were on her campaign team.
Whit Ayers, look out at the swing vote, the kind of independent middle ground from the Republican perspective. Who's got the best leverage on that? Al Gore, Hillary, Obama? You know, where you're battling for that margin, people, you know, wondering between right and left, Republicans and Democrats, how does Al Gore stack up?
Tom, you tell me what the situation will be in Iraq in the fall of 2008, and I'll be able to answer that question.
Do you think it's going to be good?
I have no idea. I hope it'll be better than it is now, but I have no idea. And that is going to be governing the general election climate. If most of our troops are out of Iraq by the spring of 08, we'll be talking about something else. But you're not going to be able to evaluate Al Gore's persuasiveness and attractiveness to independence without knowing what the national climate is and without knowing who the Republican nominee is going to be. It's just almost impossible at this point to be able to answer that question with any credibility at all.
Marty Parrott?
I don't think people are going to forget the Iraq War, even if many troops have been brought home. This is not an issue that's going to simply stop. One of the things that interests me is that Matt seems to be saying that Al Gore will be satisfied with trophies. That's not true. He hasn't built his life to walk away with an Oscar or even with a Nobel Prize. I mean, he has devoted his life to real public service, not to accolades.
And the demons issue, we touched it, but it still kind of hangs there. Matt thinks he's so angry.
I do, too. This is Whit.
I
think he really can't stand Republicans. And I think that voters are going to be looking for a president in 2008 who can really get something done, something accomplished.
But maybe voters will think, what airs, that there's quite a lot to be angry about.
Well, they also get really fed up with Democrats and Republicans who sit around in Washington figuring out how they can zap the other side rather than address many of the problems.
Well, that's not Al Gore, by definition.
That's particularly the case with independents. Hillary Clinton, despite her differences, has been willing to work across the aisle with people like Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore, I think, has such contempt for Republicans, it's very difficult for me to see him working productively with any of them on anything.
Let me get a call from Iowa. That's caucus territory. Karen's calling from Waterloo, Iowa. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Good to have
I'm
you.
An independent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd take a lot more than an ice storm in Iowa for me to vote for Hillary. It would freeze over and then some. Barack Obama has a much better chance, and he doesn't have the kind of experience I'm looking for. Al Gore would have my vote in a heartbeat.
Why? Why?
I love Jimmy Carter. Because he's not afraid to call Iraq Iraq. He's not afraid to call to speak from his heart. He's not saying what somebody wants him to say. He's saying what he believes.
People said that last time he took the orders of his campaign advisors, and that's what, you know, messed him up. People say. You think he's different?
If that's the case, then I would say right now he's learned from his mistakes. And I think that's another thing. Just as you heard in the soundbite you put on earlier, he'll admit his mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, he's got a better chance than either Hillary or Barack of beating the Republicans in the next election because he's got more credibility.
Karen, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Matt Bai, what about that triangulation there?
Well, you know, Karen ought to know because those people in Waterloo know their politics, I can tell you that. But I think this is one of those, and I think Whit would probably agree, and Martin will probably disagree, which is fine, but I think this is one of those classic cases in politics. Forgive the cynicism, because I don't think of myself as a cynic, Tom, and I don't think you do. But this is one of those classic moments in politics where people say, he's the guy, he speaks from his heart, I love that guy, he's the thing we need, he's the guy who's not in there. Democrats especially go through this every 4 or 8 years. Mario Cuomo's the guy we really need in the race, Gary Hart's the guy we really need in the race. You know, and then as soon as he gets in the race, his polls shoot up, the press writes that it's over. 2 weeks later, the consultants tell him he should say one thing, he says another, he gets cut. Suddenly, you know, the bottom drops out. It's like Al Gore, I guess there's a question that underlying the heart of this discussion is how much do politicians change?
Do you think he's still really going to twist around on Bob Schrum's strategy string?
I'm sure Al Gore is different, as John Edwards is different. I'm sure that he would not have the same consultants around him. I'm sure he would intend, if he wanted to run for president, to run differently. But when the public sees you every day, when you're forced to make the decisions that candidates are forced to make every day, Martin knows this well. He's been around campaigns much longer than I have. There is an effect that brings one back to the more base nature of politics, and that has the effect of exposing what kind of politician you really are. And Al Gore has never been a great politician. And if he wants to run, hey, I think he could win, and I think he'd be a compelling candidate. But I don't think anybody should think that he walks in, everybody loves him, and it's over. I think that there would be a real reconciling process between the Al Gore people think they're going to see and the Al Gore that you would actually see as a presidential candidate, who would probably be more like the Al Gore you've seen before.
Marty Peretz, 5 minutes back in the political pool, and he's wet as everybody else again?
I'm sorry?
5 minutes back in the game, and he's kind of, you know, on the same playing field as everybody else again, Matt Maia suggesting.
Absolutely not. I want to go back to the folks who said Al Gore is angry. I've known Al Gore, really, for 42 years. He is not an angry person. He just isn't. That's the truth. But I think that the 2000 election was chastening for him, and it moved him, I think, to trust himself more and his instincts more than he did during the election. So he, after all, went through a real trauma. He thought he had been elected president of the United States. I believe he was. The Supreme Court, by a vote of 5-4, in an unusual permutation of judicial thinking, decided the election for us. Now, that would give any person a certain bitterness, but Al has dealt with it. The concession speech that we heard was so dignified, so patriotic, so respectful of process and politics, that this angry trope really puzzles me.
Widders, what about it? Do Republicans, would Republicans look more warily at Al Gore now, a transformed man, put through the fire, plugged into people's feelings of uncertainty about the future, insecurity, concern? I mean, you know, could this be like rising from the ashes as a new kind of transformed threat, or are you in the nothing new under the sun camp on Al Gore?
Straight answer, Tom, is no. Al Gore is Al Gore, and Republicans will vote 95% for their Republican nominee against him. I see no circumstances under which any significant proportion of Republicans decide all of a sudden that Al Gore is now their cup of tea.
You see a bigger portion going for Hillary, or for that matter, for Barack Obama?
Well, I think they're more likely to do that. They're still going to rally around their nominee. The real question is the one you asked earlier, and that is where independents are going to go, and I think that's still an open question.
Let me take a call
It seems to me that Christian Republicans, even evangelical Republicans, are going to have a great deal of difficulty with Giuliani, Romney, and for historical reasons, McCain. Those are the only three guys you got.
Well, maybe fundamentalists. I don't know about Christians more generally, but we'll hear that. Let me get a call from Burlington, Vermont, if I may. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that I don't really think, unfortunately, that Al has much of a shot. I feel like he's had two shots, and whether or not he actually won, he's not the president, and I think there needs to be some new blood. I think he hasn't changed enough in the public eye, and I don't think he's likable enough to beat a Republican candidate, unfortunately.
And are you a Republican or a Democrat, Mary?
No, I'm a Democrat. I really like him. I just don't think that he has enough to do it. I think too many people dislike him and think he's boring.
New blood, says Burlington, Vermont. Let's go to Warwick, Rhode Island. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just had two quick comments. I also don't like Al Gore, but I think he would win because number one, it'd be really hard for Hillary to attack him since he was part of the Clinton administration. So it would pretty much reflect onto the administration if she had anything bad to say about that. and it's very easy for her to attack Obama. And on top of that, other than Iraq, my biggest issues in the election are going to be who is for or against the Hate Crimes Act, the Real ID Act, and the Fairness Doctrine.
So you're moving your agenda. We hear it, Jeff. Matt Bai, what about it? Hard for Hillary to attack Al Gore, who was her husband's co-pilot? Has he got some Teflon here or not?
No, I don't really agree with that. It's hard for everybody to attack everybody. It's hard to attack a woman. It's hard to attack an African-American candidate. It's hard to attack somebody you've served with or somebody who was part of your husband's administration. I mean, they all find a way, sadly, to do that. But I just don't think I find it hard to believe that Al Gore is actually, and Martin would know better than I do. I just find it hard to believe that he's actually very serious about running. I mean, everybody who knows him and who I've talked to has said really clearly that he doesn't want to rule it out because politicians are loath to rule out anything, but he simply made no preparations to do it, and I think that's the strongest indicator that we have to this point.
That may be the bottom line. Marty Peretz, what about it?
Well, he's keeping in touch in a very active way. He's on venues that every other politician would like to be and would like to be as good on these venues. You know, when he does these late-night comedy shows, he is really very funny, as he was at the Academy Awards. And his pace is almost like a candidate. Do you know that he has done 1,000 talks on global warming?
Yes, we do.
1,000 in America alone. That's really staggering. This is not someone who is walking away from politics.
Whit Ayers, the Wall Street Journal conservative editorial page, having a heyday with Al Gore's electricity bill at home in Nashville, his heated pool and whatnot for the Inconvenient Truth man. Is that a fear sign here, or Republicans saying, come on, Al, we'd like to tangle with you, or please go away, Al?
I'm not sure Al Gore could carry his home state of Tennessee in a presidential race again. He didn't carry it the last time. I don't think he could this time. So I don't think Republicans are the least bit scared of Al Gore. I think they know that he would unite their base against whoever is a Republican nominee. So I think most Republicans would say, bring it on.
Whit Ayers with Ayers McHenry and Associates. Thanks very much for being with us, Whit.
My pleasure, Tom.
Martin Peretz, I want to give the last word to you today. Put yourself in an armchair across from your old friend Al Gore. You've got 30 seconds to make the case. Why should he run for president if you think he should?
I do think he should. And the case that I would make is that the country is so far away from the modalities and the ideals of the founding parents that he who has studied them, he who knows them deep in his heart and deep in his mind, owes it to the country to run. Not to forget that his life, he spent his life preparing for this.
There's the pitch. Martin Peretz, editor-in-chief of the New Republic, Matt Bai at the New York Times. Thank you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.